Welcome to Still Not Asking For It, a podcast brought to you by Hope Harbor, a sexual trauma recovery center. I'm your host, Elena, and this episode is part two of a conversation Mel and I had with Dr. Cree Dye. In part one, which is the episode before this, and I hope you all have had a chance to already check that one out, we talked a lot with Cree about all the amazing things that she does in the community, including yoga, and she's an educator. But then also the conversation went to kind of about shame, anger, kind of where that shows up in our bodies, as well as like how we can heal our communities and find this common ground, this common connection between each other and between our community and ourselves. The conversation then kind of led to all these other aspects of shame and where we see growth needed in our spaces and within ourselves. And that kind of led us to a conversation about the purity myth, the virginity myth, kind of what we call like purity culture. This idea that the first time you have sex is like the super special thing. Well, there's a lot of feelings about that. There's a lot of, unfortunately, you know, some negative aspects to that culture and to this message that we send. We come from Kentucky, so we're in the South. We're in, you know, what folks identify as the Bible Belt. You know, we definitely acknowledge the religious influence here during this conversation. So that's kind of part of what we talk with Cree about in this episode. Mel and I were really excited to have this conversation with Cree and that this conversation just naturally kind of happened because this was a topic that we've been wanting to address for a while now. And so we also wanted to open it up and hear from you all, to hear from our listeners. So I have added a link for folks to record like a voice message that can be sent to us that we could possibly use in a later episode. So you can find that in our info. You can also find it by going to our page on Anchor, Still Not Asking For It. And there's this really cool little button where you can then just record on your phone or on your computer if you have a fancy mic like we do, that will then be sent to us and possibly could be used in a later episode, and you'll be notified of that. And kind of what we're looking for with that is kind of personal experiences with virginity, whether it be, you know, kind of the messages that were, you know, were spoken in your communities, religious or culturally, or just maybe within your family, you know, maybe how the negative side effects, right, of this this type of culture, but then also maybe some stories of empowerment, how you were able to overcome that. So we definitely want to hear from you all. We're really excited about this type of collaborative effort. But to get us started, why don't you hear from Cree Dye?
I do want to, you know, because this is like, so this is like a new phrase I've adopted of, you know, not men, because, you know, I'd find myself, right, we often attribute these types of, or I do, at least, certain, right, like oppression, certain discrimination of women, right? And then as I, you know, grown and learned more, then I would add in trans people, you know, non-binary people. And then I kind of came to the realization that, like, we're not treated negatively, you know, because of these identities as, you know, girl, woman, trans person, non-binary, you know, gender queer person, but actually because we're not men. And I think that goes back, this is again, getting real far into it and off track, but, you know, like goes back to like, whenever you're pregnant and they see what, sex the, you know, the baby is, and they look to see if there's a penis or not. You know, they don't look for the vulva, right? They're not like trying to find where the vulva is. It's if there's a penis or not, right? So like from the very beginning, even that like hormone test that they do now, it's to test to see if you have the hormone to indicate that, or a higher level of testosterone or something. Okay, I don't really know what I'm talking about enough to educate people on it. But anyway, it's to indicate that if you're carrying the XY, right, like gene, if you have a, you know, higher level of testosterone in you. And I just think that just really explains it all, that like, you know, these groups of people are treated negatively, not because of who they are, but because they're just simply not men.
Well, so it's all about how you frame it, because in actuality, you know, we all start off as female, right?
I've heard that, and I have theories against it, but
you don't think that we all start off there? I do.
Yeah.
I believe that there is no way all of us came from love. And I believe that, I know that that might sound extreme, but I do believe that we all start as love. And I believe that when we talk about, my husband and I get in these discussions all the time about, oh, he'll say women are more emotional beings. Women are more this beings. And it's like, let's go back to mind your kind language, right? Let's just go back to that language and look at what are those characteristics or qualities that we do know, not based on socialization, that we do know that they are present in non-women. Mm-hmm. Right? We do know there are some. But then we also know that there's this continuum of the level, like there's levels to it, you know, there's a continuum of it, of how much present that is. For most of us, we just speak in this binary way, but there's right. a continuum of it all. But I do believe that the love is real heavy on one side.
And that comes from being female. Do you think we all start out as like XX chromosomes? Mm-hmm. Okay.
There's something in the process of like genetics as like you are growing within your mother that they talk about the Y chromosome does not come in until later. Like that is a thing. Like it grows. And then, and I probably should not be speaking on this. This is articles I've read about like intersex people. And that's where I learned this. And it was talking about like how that sometimes like your chromosomes can differ than your genitals. And that's where a lot more people are intersex than we actually know.
And we're as common as redheads.
Yeah. And so, that's where but then it also goes in the whole thing. Have you heard the scientific theory that technically in like a million years or something, men are going to become extinct because it's something with like the chromosomes going to die out and women are going to be able to reproduce within themselves?
Interesting. I have not. I know we typically do like a ton of research.
Sorry, we went way off topic.
Before we start talking about this stuff. But okay, so Cree, going back to, you know, you saying this, you know, talking with your husband about, you know, oh, women are, you know, more emotional. Because I do think, right, that, right, because we know, right, you know, people who are not women are also emotional beings, you know. And I think part of it too is, yeah, again, I'm getting back with the stifled stuff, you know, that those emotions are not encouraged, you know, because of toxic masculinity and these, you know, expectations of how men should react, how men should treat others, you know. And is that kind of where you are, you know, going with it too? That they do have it within them. They're just not harnessing it.
You know, and so here's what I like to do, you all, with these types of topics. I feel like my understanding and the way that I see it is ever changing, right? Mm-hmm. Because I do believe that there is a continuum. And just like when we talk about someone's sexuality in regards to, like, I had to have this discussion with plenty of individuals that believe that they're, you know, you can't be born gay, right? That type of thing. And she just rolled her eyes. So you have this continuum where, just like there's a continuum when it comes to cognitive ability, right? When you think about all the aspects of being human, just like there's a continuum of emotional ability. Yes, you have people that are on this end, on this end. And I can go on and on with all the different aspects. So why do we say that cannot be true for somebody who's born, like they're born with an attraction to the same sex, or they're born with internally, I feel like I'm a non-male, right? So why is that one area we don't allow, right? That's just one area we absolutely say, no, there's no continuum. It's either this way or this way, right? And that I don't, like, I'm trying to encourage people to see, like, open yourself up to the possibilities of that. I do know there are situations where when I was a high school counselor and there was a girl who liked girls, she was on a basketball team and she was intentional about, I'm about to turn all the other girls out. Girls that had never, ever considered being with other girls. I do know that happens where the rest of those girls were not born with an attraction to girls. That wasn't their primary choice, right? But they got an experience that completely shifted that, right? So there are experiential things. So we talk about like they're born that way or there's some experiences that change that. That is a possibility. I saw it firsthand. And I do know individuals who, from when they were children, as a child, that is how they identified.
Right? Yeah. allowing yourself, right, to explore things and to experience something, right? Like if you're so against something, whether it be, right, you know, hooking up with somebody of the same gender or, you know, a feeling emotions, which is silly, right? Everyone feels emotions, you know, so to even like say that people aren't emotional is, you know, but like, right, like if you close yourself off, you know, like you're intentionally doing that, you know, like we all have the ability. I do think, I know now I've tried to like go back and be like, okay, I guess some people are just like 100% straight. Like it's not their fault. You know, but that's fine.
I was going to say that to you when you said like, it'll be good. Like if these men aren't born anymore, I'm like, girl, I like the boys.
I know. I'm okay.
The banana ones, the vanilla. I like all of them. Like, no, I want them around.
I know. I'm just kidding. I guess my comment was I do like to joke about like non-men taking over. But obviously, no, like I don't really want that for people. I, you know, everybody matters. I feel
disclaimer. Elena likes to say white men are trash and she's married.
And
to
I'm
one.
Married to one. Yes. Okay. So I get it. There's like a really great meme where it's like Pocahontas from the Disney's Pocahontas. And it's like her, it's the other guy from the tribe who's like, these white men are dangerous, you know? And then it's like also me. And it's like Pocahontas kissing, John Smith, you know, yeah. Like, yeah, I totally, yeah. But I think, right. I think you can do both.
So now we can do both. Thank you.
Y'all,
I see that happen. And that to me makes me smile. Y'all, my daughter, my oldest daughter, Nia, who you're talking about, she is like Miss Black Power, but her boyfriend is as white as can be. I have an uncle who is like straight up black people, black on black on black on black, but his wife is white, right? So
you can't help who you love. You know, that's great. But yeah, no, yeah, you can do both. And I think that's fine. Right. And then also like being able to critique yourself and be honest, you know, that, yeah, no, I don't actually want men to die out.
Me neither.
But I do think it is pretty surprising how long, men have like been able to be in control of everything and like people not revolt more. And it does, I think, goes back to the Bible, goes back to religion and the roots in that, which then, okay, reminds me, I do want to hear eventually, maybe it is on another episode, your ideas of, yeah, on like relationship to sex and like virginity and stuff like that, because that is like a topic Mel and I keep talking about.
Well, I hope y'all consider inviting me to talk a little bit about it, because I can even speak from not just my own experience, but being a school counselor, a high school counselor, and just the experience of so many young people. Because, you know, around high school, middle school, high school is where that really rises up. Mm-hmm. And just how we're taught that this beautiful gift is so dirty and dark and just nasty, or, you know, like you're going to hell, or, you know, like all of that, all of those narratives. Right, y'all?
Yeah. Right?
Isn't it time for us to reconcile with some of that? Like, isn't it time for us to put some of that to bed? Like, lay that down. Like, no. And then how it still affects me today from when I was growing up and just how sex was communicated to me, and how literally it still affects me today, how I experience sex.
Yeah. Right? Like it's an ongoing process, right? Yeah. Of unpacking it, especially like if you consume, you know, media, if you're watching movies, TV shows, you know, and because those messages, you know, are continued. Yeah. And then thinking back, yeah, like to young people and like that type of, you know, like what that really does. You know, Mel and I have talked a lot about like, yeah, like we both grew up going to Christian school. I only went to Christian school for 3 years, but it felt like forever. God, like,
well, I went for 13.
Yeah, you're
13.
But, you know, like, yeah. And like these types of messages, right? Like still, you know, even if we've tried to like get rid of them, and I no longer identify as a Christian, but haven't at all during my adulthood, you know, but like it is like you can't deny that these messages, right, like are a part of our culture. And
What if we were taught the story of just what happens when we come together in sex, like the energy, what's exchanged, what happens to the energy bodies, and what happens with like even just the location inside the vagina when a penis is placed in there, and the meridians and the energy that flows and what's being touched upon? Like, what if we learned that instead of you know, like you have sex, you're going to hell, or, you know, like what if we learn as far as the energies, or even just explored it? It doesn't have to be the absolute, but here's a consideration. Like, this is one thing that when you lay down with someone, what's being exchanged, like in that sexual act? Or even, how about this, y'all? How powerful and intimate we can be just through, like, we can have an intimate relationship with our emotions, like emotional sex, or like, I always tell people that I am, what is it called? Oh, hold on. Give me one second. It's going to come to me. I can't think of the word, something sexual, where sex for me is through spirit. Like,
you're saying, like, emotionally you like have this intimacy without even being physical.
The spiritual sex, like I feel it. The best sex to me is the spiritual experience. Like, the physical is not even necessary. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think of the word. It's like sapiosexual. I can't think of it, but I'll pull it up. But just what if we were taught about that and not just the physical? Like, we have a body, but that's not who we are, right? But so many people stay on this physical plane and they don't even explore all these other aspects of us. Mm-hmm. So what if, you know, what if that were introduced, right?
In my yoga... And I was just going to say, my yoga teacher training, we got into, like Kundalini, you know, and like sex magic and like, you know, like you're talking about the energies like coming together, funnel opening up at the top of your head to like receive. It's, yeah, I love all that stuff.
I just wonder too, I mean, I'm sure there's studies done on this. I wonder, this is where we like Google in the middle of our podcast. I wonder what, if there's statistics that show like in cultures that do value things like this more, that are looking at sex more from the spiritual connection, from this more like the sex positive place that we don't have in at least any westernized country. I wonder like what their statistics look like on like relationships, like length of relationships, on, gosh, I could even get into like abortion rates and things like that. Like, I wonder what the statistics look like and how you can just see it in numbers, like how much more successful their society could be from not putting so much shame on sex in general.
And overall health, right?
Yeah.
I'm trying to see this book. I'm going to share the title with you all. Y'all know how I am about books, crazy over book. But there's a book that really highlights just the situation in matriarchal, like something that's more matriarchal societies and patriarchal, matrino, maybe I'm saying it wrong. But when it's more focused on the women, just life expectancy and life, like life enjoyment. But how everything is connected to sex, the flowers, just everything in the universe is sex, right? And so I'll have to tell you all that title, but it's a beautiful book that really taps into that. And I really appreciate it. I appreciate for us looking at something just from a different perspective and not just what we're always like. We are like, that's basically shoved in our mouths that as a sexual being, I need to show up a certain way and be a certain way, especially as a woman, right? It's just like, it's literally forced in our mouths.
Yeah. No, I definitely want to know what that book is.
I feel like that's what people need to hear more, is like the voices of these people, especially people that are saying it doesn't always work. Like, just talking to, I mean, like a lot of, shouldn't say a lot of my close friends, but like friends that have really like waited and then saying like how, you know, they've been married for years. And like 6 years later, they still have this weird relationship with sex. And then like coming to the thing of like, do we need to talk to a therapist about this? Because I don't know how to have sex with this person, even though like we have this great relationship, we're so connected. And then them realizing it's within themselves because they don't have the means to get there without fear. Like the only way they can think of sex is through fear.
You all.
So
yes, everything you're saying, you're lining up with the other day. Like I said, I was in meditation and then I said, like, what is your story, your origin story with sex? And you know what happened? If it's okay for me to share this, I was sitting on the bed with my husband and we were talking about a marriage breath and like discussing topics. And I don't know why. It was so emotional for me because I ended up talking about my very first experience with a boyfriend. And when I was in high school, he was older than me. And remember people telling me, and just think about how narratives can just have such an impact on you. Like people telling me that because he was older than me, if I don't have sex with him, he's going to end up cheating on me. So then this whole story about cheating came into my life. And I remember thinking that how, oh gosh, like really in my head, like, oh gosh, I really love him and I want to be with him, but I don't want him to cheat on me. And I don't necessarily want to have sex yet. Like we enjoy each other. We're friends. Like we have a good time and sex has never really been brought up. And I remember going to one of my uncles and saying, hey, you know, can I talk to you about something? This is what I'm hearing. Is it true? You know, like who else, where do you go when you want to talk about like, is this, I'm a teenage girl and this is what I'm hearing. And is this true? And I remember my uncle saying to me like, well, baby girl, yep, that's probably how it's going to go down. Right.
Oh, so
but think about it, as adults, we have adults who truly believe that.
Oh yeah.
As an adult, he said that to me. And I remember saying to myself, like, I'm going to have sex, not really wanting to. But then also the other side of growing up Christian, if you do this, you're going to hell. Like your body is being tainted. Your body is being damaged. Like all this stuff going on in my head. And I was sitting there telling my husband a story. I start crying. I'm like tearing. And I mean, I'm just like crying. He's like, what's going on? I was like, because of those narratives, that story, it influenced my decision. And then how it still influences me today about the idea of like, because I did end up choosing to have sex with him. And he called me one night in the middle of the night, you all. And he says, I got to tell you something. I've been sleeping with this girl, having sex with her. So then this story in my head, like, I didn't do it soon. Like, they told me that was going to happen. But it was right after I chose to finally have sex. And then so who do I go talk to about this? But right. This idea of like, I shared myself, I basically gave myself, I didn't do it like it should have been, like all of that, right? It drove me crazy. I remember it. So you all, then I was sitting in that the other day and I'm like, our origin stories and how that, the fact that I started crying, there's still an emotional charge present. Excuse me. And that emotional charge is the reason why I started crying. And I was like, okay, I need to go through that and restory and do the work that will help me heal around my sexual self, because it's still impacting my life today. In regards to my husband and how I feel, seriously, this is no joke. When he's interested in having sex, and it's times, many times that I'm not, there's kind of like this guilt that comes over me. Mm-hmm. And then also a touch of fear, right? Because of the stories that have been told to me. So what if we went and explored that and excavated all of that? We got to excavate these things with courage so that our sexual stories can be different than what, you know, some of those narratives, like it's like this earthing of what we've known, what we've thought, what we believe. We need to examine all of that. Right. Because it's still there. And stories are everything. Right. So.
But I think that's what people need to hear, because I don't know if I've ever heard someone say that, you know, out loud. And I think that's really powerful, you know, because I mean, I've had those same, you know, thoughts too, especially as like a young person of, yeah, like, oh, if I don't do this, I don't have sex, they're going to get it from somewhere else. Right. And yeah, like that still gets stuck in your head. Or, you know, then if my spouse doesn't want to have sex with me now, is he getting it somewhere else? Is that why, you know, this like fear of cheating, which that's again, when you consume media, it is in like so many movies and TV shows. Like, it's like, is cheating this prevalent as they make it out to be? That gets me.
I really like that you shared it, because I mean, I have a similar experience. You know, my first time was with someone who had already had sex, and I had all these people around me kind of saying the same thing, like, well, he already knows what he's doing. Like, and then it's like, well, you better do it the right way. And I was like, what the heck's the right way? Somebody going to show me this? Like, I don't know. It's like, there's two times I feel like I've like truly felt fear in my life. One is like the first time you have sex, and the second is when they give you a child at the hospital until you can bring it home. And I'm like, those are the two most terrifying things. And it's like, I remember just being like, I don't know what I'm supposed to do with this. And then everyone saying that, like, well, if you do it wrong, he's going to cheat. And I do wonder if people that are not women feel this way in the same way, because obviously, you know, there's a very extreme thing of like that sex should please a man. And, you know, like female pleasure is a whole new ball game that we're barely getting into. And I know like when I think back to like my Christian upbringing, they always like pulled the boys to talk about masturbation and were like, you don't need to do this and you don't need to do this. And like, nobody's talking to the girls. And then none of the girls are talking to it about each other because they're too afraid to admit to be like, yeah, I'm the one doing that at home. And so I think it all kind of goes around that thing of like, you know, it's our duty as women to please your husband, and
which is real heteronormative.
Yeah. Anyway. And it's so,
like, we're not even talking about, right, the little gay kids and like how they're experiencing sex.
Well, that's one of the things I get annoyed about.
Except for the basketball girls at the high school creed. They were like, getting it.
Sex education completely cuts out like a queer experience in general. And they're probably just sitting there if they got any sex education, which most of us didn't. But they're like, wait, what? How do I do anything? My sex education all had to do with like flowers and stuff. And it was like watering the flower and.
Well, it's all shame
based. Catholic school stuff.
Yeah. And it's all shame based, right? Like coming from that space where there was no positive to it. Right. You know, which, you know, Cree talking about our moon cycle, you know, and like the shame that's around that, the shame around, you know, vaginas and vulvas, like, you know, this just like shame culture, shame around emotions, right. To bring it full circle, feeling the energy of other people, you know, not being able to embrace it.
That's a lot of things you said that basically make us human. So Basically as humans, we've got to be shamed for part of our humanity is compromised when we don't. That's how I feel. Like we disrespect our humanity when we don't tap into all of us, you know, mm-hmm. Like we are a crime against humanity when we don't tap into our whole selves. Like, why wouldn't we? Why wouldn't we start exploring? I remember as a little girl, as early as 7 or 8 years old, when I rubbed my vagina a certain way, that felt good, right? Like, but then I couldn't tell anybody that. But that, if I move, like, it could have been an accident, but I move a certain way. I'm like, whoa, I like that, right? Mm-hmm. Like, why can't we talk about, like, what is wrong with that?
I remember sitting in like a high chair, like in a high chair, like being that young and that feeling of like the bar between.
Yeah. Like literally I can feel that this feels good, but I'm told like, don't feel good. Like your body has a pleasure point. And that's what I find. Like I've worked with plenty of families, you are, especially children that have been in foster care that find a pleasure point and they actually use it, you know, use that pleasure point to kind of soothe them.
Right.
But then, no, they can't do that because it's deviant behavior. When that's one moment that they can feel good when they've come out of a shitty situation, right? With some adults like beating their head in or something. Oh, right. Gosh, don't get me started. But, right? So they find a pleasure point, but then it's deviant because they want to feel good.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I feel like that's my goal as a parent, is to be able to talk about these things and to hope that, you know, my son or any other children that I may have, like, want to come and talk. I mean, like, he tells me it all at 4. I mean, I hear all about it and he loves to talk about his penis. But that's something when he talks about it in front of other people, Elena's one of the best. Cause he'll come and just start talking to her about everything. He was telling her the other day how a candle looked like a tampon and she just went with it. And I mean, I tell him if he's asking the question, I'm going to tell him the truth. But that's something that I've noticed even when other adults are around and he brings these things up, they almost want him to be shamed for it. And that's where I'm like, nope, I'm going to stand my ground. If he wants to talk about this makes him feel good or this.
You know what I used to do with my son? Because he never, none of my kids, like we walk around naked, like they always mm-hmm. walk around naked. But I remember with my son, especially because he was fascinated with his penis and, you know, whatever, wanted to point it or stick it out, whatever. We'd laugh about it. But then I did start telling him, it wasn't that I want to shame him, but I would say to him, you do that around your family because other people, they're not so sure about theirs. So don't do that around them because they'll probably be uncomfortable. But it's not your responsibility to make them comfortable, but they're still working on how they feel about their penis and vagina. So let them learn how to do that by themselves, right? You don't have to show them or teach them, but other people won't understand it. they won't understand, but not putting it on him.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, cause they're uncomfortable. It's like, well, no, they still got some stuff they need to work on. So they don't understand that that's just a part of your body and it's a gift from the universe. Right. That's how I used to frame it to them, because it is a matter of like context where people will take mm-hmm. it. You know, they'll just take it. You know how people will. Yeah, oh my gosh.
Well, so. And I think too, I mean, thinking about, you know, so the work that we do with, you know, sexual assault, ending sexual assault, you know, working with survivors, right? It is like a common listed thing that if a child touches themselves, like, or believed, right? People believe this. If a child touches themselves, if they expose themselves, that it's a sign of abuse. And, you know, and I've had conversations with parents and grandparents where I'm like, are there other signs? Like, is there anything that would make you believe that this, you know, has happened? Like, they're like, oh no. And it's like, okay. Well, here I am to let you know, like that this is really normal. Like what it sounds, you know, I'm not here. If you need to make a report for child sexual abuse, like please do that. But this alone is not a sign, you know? And I think again, that comes from shame, right? That comes from, you know, this idea that our bodies are bad, that, that only bad things, right, could possibly be happening if a child is, you know, is confident with their body and touching themselves. God, that's a lot.
I mean, that's something that I went through whenever things first started happening with him. I mean, I remember me and my husband looking at each other and being like, what's going on at daycare? You know, like, it's so set into, and then I was like, nope, this is normal. This is what should be happening. Like doing research, and it's like, yeah, especially around like age 2 and 3, kids start touching themselves and figuring out what feels good. And now I get conversations all the time of like, my penis is sticking up and I don't like it. I'm like, it'll go down a little bit.
I you know what I started telling my son, I say, okay. He's like, Mom, sometimes I'll just be sitting there with my friends and it just starts sticking up. And I'm like, that's when you go to your breath. I say, come on, I want you to, let's practice. And we literally used to practice if his penis starts sticking up and it was like in his pants and he's somewhere, like he could be in the middle of class. He could just be in a random place, you know, right. Say, okay, let me teach you. We'll go to our breath so it can help calm the penis down. Like use your breath to do everything for you.
Yeah.
Joke all the time. Breath, calm the penis, right? Let it calm down.
Oh my God. I love it. I also love the idea that like your son Cree was like maybe telling like adults, like, you're just not happy with your penis. You know, like you just haven't come.
I'm like, I will never let my children perceive who they are as a problem.
Right. Yeah.
Like if anything, no, you the problem, y'all got the problem. Mm-hmm. Like if I know my babies, not meaning they're being mean, like that's no place my kids, I think would ever go. Cause of who their mama is. Like, it's like you look at another person and be like, oh, you still need to work on some things, right? It is not a judgment. It's just a reality that you're not at a place where you're comfortable with that. But don't you feel bad. I always tell them, don't you feel bad when people are mean. Like my kids, all three of my children went through the race stuff mm-hmm. where like many times they've been like, well, at least a white kid would say, well, at least I'm not black, or at least, you know, it's like I have to tell them, like, you know, don't you ever receive that as a problem. You know, if they're perceiving that as a problem, that's on them, not you. And I'll go down the list of all these amazing black people in your life who, you know, are wonderful. So then wonder why did they arrive at that story? Like, are they afraid of the magic of black people? Like, I have to go through that. And I say to them constantly, but you got to always remember that every single race has some people that show up in a good way and some people that show up in a not so good way. Like, it's not one particular race. We're not going to ever adopt that. All we can do is say that we all came to this earth as love. And some of us are having a temporary deviation from love's perfection, right? And that's how I want you to see everyone. I don't care what race they are or what gender or how they identify, right?
Yeah.
So that's that.
I love that. Okay. So I could talk to you. I think we could talk forever. But you know, the concept of this episode was, you know, like how do we heal ourselves? How do we heal our community? I think we've touched on like a million things, right? Like that, at least, you know, we can walk away and maybe focus a little out of time, you know? But is there anything else that you wanted to get to that you weren't able to, or last thoughts, parting thoughts?
I think, and you all have probably heard me say this. I absolutely know that as we do the work within, we heal around. Mm. I absolutely know that. And that's my absolute belief, that when we do the work within, we heal around. And I will tell you all, for any BIPOC listeners, in February, I'm doing some work with bringing justice back to our bodies, specifically for BIPOC, through Sanctuary in the City. And I have some promotion things to share with you. It's an international organization, and it's specifically for BIPOC people, mm-hmm. especially with what's been going on. Actually, what's been going on for a long time, right?
Yeah, since the beginning. Mm-hmm.
So I am honing in on some of that, like that work specifically for BIPOC, and I'll share that with you all eventually. But one more thing, this yes. book I was telling you about, it's called The Bloom Book, A Flower Essence Guide to Cosmic Balance. But her name is Heidi Smith. And y'all, I learned about it through Sounds True. I don't know if y'all love Sounds True like I do, but I'm completely obsessed with Sounds True. And I get pretty much all my book ideas through Sounds True. But this book, you all, and how she taps into everything you're passionate about, like when you all say everything that angers you, she covers it all through this book. Like literally she connects it and it's beautiful. She did such an amazing job. I'm trying to figure out how to integrate this into one of my classes, but you all will love it. I'd love to hear when you get it. I'd love to hear your
thoughts. Yeah. Maybe this can be book two in our book club we're going to be starting.
No,
we're trying to start a book club with our staff and volunteers, and we're going to start with Emergent Strategy. Have you read that?
I haven't. I have it on my list.
I'm a big Adrienne Marie Brown fan.
We listened to her. I listened to her episode of Getting Curious with Jonathan Van Ness. And I was so obsessed. I like called Elena in the middle of it. And I was like, I need to talk about all these things. Can you go listen to this? I have so many thoughts in my head. And so now we're obsessed and we have to read the book. So,
yeah. But I think, I mean, it's along the same idea, right? Of, yeah, like healing ourselves, right? You know, and then healing around us.
Well, as we do work within, we heal around.
Yes, mm-hmm. We do work within, we heal around, yes. You know, because I think we get really caught up in the individual, you know, of, oh, my, you know, which again goes back to the, you know, my kind, the me, you know, all of it, right? Like everything. And yeah, I think that really satisfies that. And it's really approachable. Like it's actually a really approachable, I think, method. Okay, so you've already mentioned your BIPOC healing.
That event that's yes. coming up in February. Mm-hmm. It's a 4-part series. If I think about anything else I'm doing, I know that I'm doing some other stuff, but it's just not coming to my mind. The book, I did finish that book. I think you all have heard me talk about it. It's framed as for higher ed professionals, like helping students work through stress. But literally, I wrote it in a format that it's open for anybody. But because I'm in higher ed, I was creating something that, you know, it catches your attention if it says you like higher ed professionals.
Right.
But it really is open and written for anybody. It has so many tools, you all. Like I would say as a therapist, this is a book to get if you're not deeply like for non-yogis, non-neuroscience people. I'm talking about all those things in a way that you can use it and apply it to your world. So that book, it'll be out in March, but it's an amazing like basics book. So that's, and then I have another book coming up for parents, and it's y'all, the title, I can't tell y'all the title yet. Okay. I gotta wait until we got it solid, but wait until you hear title and you're a mommy. So you're gonna really love it. You're gonna love
it. I'm excited already.
That's so great. So do you like welcome people to like follow you on Facebook?
Oh,
like,
sure. Is that what? So that I haven't done any more morning breaths after episode 185, but it's also on YouTube. I'm actually, it's all on YouTube available. Oh, you know what? This is me being in a PhD program. This comes from this perspective. Being a scholar, it's like we're supposed to write, do research and publications, but it's shared in like these scholarly journals. I'm like, the real people need this.
Right.
Like, why are we writing this for just other scholars, other people in the ivory tower? Like, we need to get this to the real people. So what you all see is me trying to get it to the real people. So on YouTube, it's Cree Dye. On Facebook, it's Cree Dye Yoga and Healing on that page. And then on Instagram, I think it's Cree Dye Yoga. But that's more just me and asana. Make sure you hear me. I say asana because most people think yoga is anybody that's in a posture, right? That's just my asana. So, yeah, all those places I can be found. And WKU, you can Google me. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I think that's everywhere I am right now.
This is so great. Thank you so much, Cree. This means so much to us. I think you've shared, I mean, like I knew this was going to be great, but like it was even better than I imagined. And I think I'm just really looking forward to being able to, you know, yeah, reach more people with what you got to share, with what the universe is telling you to share.
Keep doing the work, y'all. Keep getting angry.
This podcast has been brought to you by Hope Harbor, a sexual trauma recovery center located in South Central Kentucky. Special thanks to Girl Tones for our intro. Listen to the rest of their song, Can't Pause, and others wherever you stream or buy music.